unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story. Always live and the only show originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here. Only on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston Downtown, along with the indispensable Shannon McCurchy, working the boards. You know, when describing the premise of this program, I refer to the way in which storytellers, those terrific people that grace our studio every week, take us on profound journeys with poignant narratives and enchanting folk tales before returning us safely to the present. That's the power of story. Listeners are transfixed and ultimately transformed by anyone with a great tale to tell. The teller is then catapulted into the world we call astonishing, thanks to the passion and soul that's fueled his telling. With such fuel, any kind of story, from personal tale to a folk tale, can become a magical excursion for teller and listener alike. And since it's been a while since we've had two distinct magical jaunts on the same show, tonight we're going to underscore both the force of a personal narrative and the challenge and charm that drives the folktale. Brought to you by two students that I bribed to be here, and I'm glad I did because these are two exemplary young men. Born in Huntsville, raised in Friendswood, and graduated from high school in Kingwood, David Kasten will be graduating from UHT this May with a degree in interdisciplinary studies because he has no idea what he wants to do. And so interdisciplinary studies makes the best sense. He's a writer, draftsman, printer, and musician, and dreams of becoming a writer. And anyone who is artistically and intellectually ambidextrous ought to be an interdisciplinary studies major. Also a senior at UHD is math major Stephen Winkler. Also, he plans to teach math, although I should say he plans to teach math. Stephen also loves the calculation and strategy that comes with leading friends through interactive storytelling. Now, I know both of these guys, and I got to tell you, they truly represent the very best that any university or any community can offer. How you guys doing? You're nervous yet?
Doing great.
You're doing great. These guys are great. They're on medications, and they're really just ready to go, right? You guys are up and just, yep. I don't know what you're taking, but you look great. Okay, I lied about buying you guys new cars, but I'm so glad you're here. Stephen, interactive storytelling is commonly known as tabletop playing, which I've heard of before. But for those of us who've never heard of it, give us a brief description of how that works.
Well, it's typically you can think of it as, you know, as children use their imagination to go play, you know, cowboys and Indians in their backyard.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Friends would gather around a table to go on fantastic tales to play out very important characters that they have made themselves, usually being led mm-hmm. by someone who will tell them a tale that they are a part of.
Right.
What's so wonderful about it, too, is that there's so many ways it can mechanically work, and that because of that, so many people can find a way to play that will cater to their interests.
And you really are an intellectual role model, because I know so many students that I've been teaching a long time who say, if you like math, you can't possibly like storytelling, language, or reading, you know, and if you like all that stuff, you can't possibly be able to, you know, balance your checkbook. But you're a walking example that you can actually do both. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that in a little bit. David, you claimed that college was not all that straight and narrow. Give us a quick version of what that means.
Well, I mean, after high school, I really couldn't find my place. I was in art school, and then the next thing I know, I was moving all over Texas. I moved to Lubbock, then Corpus Christi, and then finally, in the recent years, I've started to hone down. But I've had some wild stories to tell, and it really is storytelling material.
Yeah.
And, when you go through these.
Well, you're both great storytellers, and that's not an idle statement. I genuinely mean that, and I think everybody really is a natural storyteller. I talk about that in class. I talk about this on the show. I've written about it. I've presented it, and I believe that. But there are some people who care more about storytelling, and I think that's where you two guys really have developed your skill sets. I think that you really do care about it. You're attentive, and you care about it. And it isn't so much a matter of whether or not you're a perfect teller or not. You're not supposed to be. But you've got to have that strong sense of caring, and I think that's what both of you have. And you both have different stories stories to share this evening. And Stephen, let's start with a tender theme in your story. It's about your dad. And you know that I really wanted you to tell this story. You know, my son's sitting over there, and I'm a dad. And before you tell your story, briefly tell us when you first decided to give yourself permission to tell this story. It's a sad story, but also a very uplifting one. When did you give yourself permission to tell this story?
Well, I always knew that I wanted to tell this story to help me heal through the process of it all. Mm-hmm. But I think truly after about a year of everything happening, it was through your class where I learned to actually express myself in a means that would be respected and understood to others.
And people were really very receptive. You had to see that. People were very receptive.
Definitely.
We're looking forward to it. Share it with us.
Okay. So, as you know, my father played a huge role in my life. He's the smartest man I know, always ready with a joke. And anytime I needed a support, he was there to give it to me. And it's thanks to him that I am the man I am today. And I thank him so much for being a part of my life. But unfortunately, about a year ago, my brother called me, letting me know that he would no longer be with us. 3 days or 2 days earlier to that call, my father was placed in ICU, where he was placed in there for a severe case of the flu and some chest pains. My brother and I went to go visit him immediately, and while he was sick, he seemed so full of life. He smiled at us and was happy to see us. And we greeted him as we entered in, and as we asked him how he was doing, he quickly changed the conversation to let us know what we should do in case anything were to happen to him. Things like what we should do with the house, how to take care of my mother, and how I'd continue my education, which was a very important thing in him. So while all this was hard to hear, I didn't believe any of it. I have been through this before with him and other family members, and we've made full recoveries. So any advice he gave me, I took with a grain of salt. But one thing he said really stuck with me. He said, "I'm very proud of you, and I think you know that." Now, normally, anyone is striving to make the people that are their role models proud, and they live for that moment of acceptance, but something sour was about this. It didn't feel, you know, it was more dread than it was hope and happiness. And I just couldn't figure it out. And I didn't have much time to reflect on that as the doctor came to take him away for procedures. So we left for the day. The next day, though, I thought about what he said, and it felt like he was telling me that his job was complete and making the man I am today. But for me, it wasn't. I still had so much to learn from him, so much to do with him, and I relied on the future to give me those experiences. I still couldn't believe anything could happen to the Superman that was my dad, but after that phone call, I had no choice.
Yeah.
The hardest thing in life is seeing the most important person lie there still. It just kills you inside. And I just couldn't take it. But I asked the staff to give me some time and privacy with them, and they closed the curtains to do so. And as I held his still warm hand, I could only think of one thing to say. I'm not done making you proud. And I've said that every day since. I'm not done making you proud. Because he still makes me the man I am today, and for that, my job has only just begun.
That is, it's more than a beautiful story. It's a story that you need to tell people as often as you can. And, you know, what one of the things that we know about good storytellers, and both of you do this with different kinds of stories, but nevertheless, both of you do this. When you tell that story, it looks as if you're telling it for the first time. You ever think about that? In other words, you're pausing, you're relaxed. The kind of emotions that hit you the very first time I heard it are the same places the emotion hits you now. So you don't prepare yourself for the feelings that you have. You don't want to. You don't defend yourself. Oh, my God, I'm going to feel a little teary here. I'm not going to. I've heard this before, and by gosh, I can handle it. It doesn't work that way. The story unfolds beautifully and naturally, and that's why it's so riveting. That's a beautiful story. A beautiful story. What's the most important thing that you want us to remember about your dad?
Well, he was full of passion. I loved listening to him speak about anything because he had a lot to say about it, and he had a lot of emotion behind it, and he didn't hide it, which was a wonderful thing to see nowadays, you know.
Yeah. Tough question, Stephen, but what do you think he would say if he heard you tell that story now? What do you think he'd say to you?
I honestly wouldn't know. No words need to be said, really. Mm-hmm. But
how would he look at you? How would he look to you?
I imagine he would probably cry and hug me and hold me close.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a hard question to answer for sure.
Was he a man of few words?
No, not at all. He was the big speaker in our house, and and he loved us all very dearly because he led us to some great moments in our life.
But if you heard the story, no words would be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
No. Wow. This is Hank Rubicek with Shannon McKerchie, and you are listening to some terrific guest tellers, David Cassett and Stephen Winkler, on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, or KPFT.org if you're listening online. But whatever avenue you selected to get here, we are very glad that you are here. David, next to Stephen's story, you know, the fanciful journey on which you're about to take us gives a whole new meaning to the adage, variety is the spice of life. So we have to get that emotional roller coaster going right now because you're going to share something a lot of fun and pretty wonderful. I love this folktale, and I know that you like these kinds of stories too. Tell us why these kind of stories work for you.
Well, there's something about the American South that it's just... it's one of those cultures in America that just really stands out, and it's amplified throughout the world. I mean, there's a reason why four British dudes decided to sing about Rocky Raccoon in an accent that was not theirs, but there's something about it. There's something homely about it.
I mean, Southern folk tales are just plain good. You know what I mean? They're good, and they're not bad. They're good, and they're prolonged diphthongs. I love it. That's great. All right. Now, this is going to be a lot of fun. So, tell us this story. You guys are going to love it.
Say, it's a full moon out tonight. Nice, cool breeze. It makes me feel like telling a story. Now, some people might tell you the devil has big horns on his head. Some people might tell you he has a tall pitchfork. And some people might even tell you he has a big red butt and a long pointed tail. But I tell you, back in Alabama, the devil ain't nothing but a regular old trickster. Kind of like a fox that might steal an alligator's eggs. He walks up and down these country roads, causing all sorts of mischief. And the story takes place in one of those particular times, on one of those particular roads. Now the devil was a-rambling down the road, and he came to a town. And he had a wild hair that day that he was going to try to break up every single happy couple in that town. And that's what he darn near did. He went from farm to farm, causing all sorts of mischief, breaking up happy couples left and right. And then soon he came to one particular farm. And nothing he could do could break up this happy couple. First, he tried stealing all their crops. Then he tried slaughtering all their pigs. And finally, he barricaded their water hole. But nothing would break up this happy couple. Now, the devil was caught in all sorts of distraught. And he was walking down the road, a-cursing up the storm. A few months went by, and he told his wife, Mrs. Devil, about it, but she wouldn't hear any of it. And on one particular day, he was walking down the road, a-cursing up a storm, and he came to a crossroads. And on that crossroads was a barefooted woman in ragged clothes. Now, the devil wasn't exactly in the mood to be talking with barefooted women in the middle of the street,
but he had to ask. He said, "Lady, why are you standing all barefoot in the middle of the road?" The barefooted woman, she looked down at her feet, looked down at her gnarly, wiggling toes, and he said, "Mr. Devil, I'm barefoot because I ain't got no shoes." The Mr. Devil said, "Oh, brother." She said, "Mr. Devil, why are you walking down the street all cursing up a storm?" And then the devil proceeded to tell her about that happy couple he could not break up. He proceeded to tell her about the crops he stole. He told her about all those pigs he slaughtered. And he even told her about that water hole he crumbled in. And he said nothing would break up this happy couple. Now the barefooted lady, she smiled a bit. And she said, "Mr. Devil, I'll make you a deal. If I can break up that there happy couple, you've got to buy me the most fanciest, the most red shoes the store could supply. And if I don't, you can have my soul." Well, the devil wasn't exactly in the particular mood to be making deals with barefooted women in the middle of the streets, but he did like making deals, especially ones he knew he could win. So he said, "Lady, I'll take that wager. If you can break up that there happy couple, I will buy you the most fanciest, the most red shoes the store could supply. And if you don't, I'm going to have your soul." So the barefooted woman, she went home to her shed in the woods, and she whipped up the most delicious apple pie the South had ever seen. And then she took that apple pie, and she brought it on down to the farm of that happy couple. Now in the fields of the farm, she saw the husband. He was working the fields, and he goes up to him. And she said that she was the new neighbor in town, and that she was bringing a pie to his wife. But first she said, "Now that's some nice crops you have there." He said, "Well, yes, someone stole all my crops, and I guess these just grew back more prosperous." She said, "Those are some mighty fat pigs you have over there." He said, "Well, someone slaughtered all my last pigs, and a goodly neighbor gave me these, and I guess they're just a little bit plump than the last ones." And finally she said, "Now that is the finest water hole I have ever seen." And he said, "Well, lightning struck the last one, and I took my time to build a better one this time." Well, after all the chitter-chatter, and after all the formalities, the barefooted woman, she walked on down the house, and she left the husband working in the field. And once she got to the house, she was greeted by the wife, and she gave that apple pie, and it was as though they had been friends for years. And they sat down in her living room, and after all the chitter-chatter, and after all the formalities, the barefooted woman said, "You know, that is the nicest kitchen I have ever seen." And the wife said, "Well, thank you." The barefooted woman said, "You know, that is the nicest silverware and china I have ever seen." And the wife said, "Well, thank you again." And finally, the barefooted woman said, "But by far the most beautiful thing in this house, madam, is you." The wife, she blushed. She said, "Well, you're very kind, but my husband is far more handsome than I." The barefooted woman, she slowly leaned over and whispered. She said, "You know, that would be true if it wasn't for that big nasty mole on his neck." The wife, she laughed a bit. She said, "Well, we've been together so long, I don't really notice anymore. It doesn't really bother me. And so the barefooted woman, she said, "What if I told you you didn't have to ignore it anymore? What if I told you if you've got a big, long, sharp razor and went into his bed while he's sleeping and slowly lop off that nasty mole while he's in his dreams? He won't even feel a thing, and in the morning he will even thank you for it." After much reluctance, the wife, it began to make sense to her, and she agreed. Now, after all the chitter-chatter, and after all the formalities, the barefooted woman, she walked out of the house and she greeted the husband once again. And she said, "You sure do work hard." And the husband said, "Well, I have to. I have to provide for my beautiful wife." He said, "You know, she means the world to me." The barefooted woman, she leaned over again and whispered, "You know, word is from town, she means the world to someone else, too." The husband, he lowered his brow. And she said, "An even bigger rumor is that she's running off with this suitor soon, and she plans to slit your throat in the night." Now the husband, he began to get infuriated. He said, "I will not take this slander, woman. You get your dirty feet off my farm. I don't want to ever see you again." And after all the hostilities, and after all the unformalities, the barefooted woman slowly walked on down the road. Now later that night, that happy couple were sitting around their dinner table, and they were eating in silence while the fireplace slowly crackled in the corner. And later that night, the husband, he gave a profound yawn, and he rested his head for the night. And later on in the night, the wife crept into his room, and she had herself the sharpest razor east of the Mississippi, and she leaned over and slowly pulled back those covers. And she slowly reached over to lop off that nasty mole from his neck. But before she did, he quickly woke up and he grabbed her arm. And he said, "That barefooted woman said you were going to kill me. I don't want to ever see you again, woman. I don't even know who you are now. Now you go down the road and you get." Now the wife, she was in some heavy distraught. She was crying so much she couldn't even get a word out. But she packed her stuff, and she slowly walked down that solemn road. Now, the barefooted woman, she was pretty happy about herself. She was about to get some fancy new shoes. So she walked down the crossroads to meet the devil, and there he was, but something was a little strange. The devil was there, and he had her shoes, but he had her shoes at the end of a fishing pole, and he had them at arm's length. And she said, "Mr. Devil, why do you have my shoes all hung up like that?" And he said, "Lady, anybody that has that much power over people, I want nothing to do with. Now you take your shoes and you get." The barefooted woman, she began to laugh. She said, "Mr. Devil, do you even know who I am?" And to the devil's surprise, her skin began to melt. And revealed under that melted skin was none other than Mrs. Devil herself. The devil exclaimed, "Woman, why you be tricksing me?" And Mrs. Devil, she said, "I've been trying to get you to buy me new shoes for years. And then you go and buy them for the first barefoot hussy you see down the street. Now you get home and you get before I, so I can give you a piece of my mind." Now, some people might tell you the devil has big horns on his head. Some people might tell you he carries a tall pitchfork. And some people might even tell you the devil has a big red butt and a long pointed tail. But I tell you, if he did, it would have been tucked up between his legs as he made that long walk home. And the next morning, the devil woke up and he stepped out on his front porch to do another day's worth of mischief. But before he set out, he makes sure to look over his shoulder a couple of times to make sure there was no barefooted women crossing his way.
Very good. All right. Boy, you get into that one. You get into that one. Now, Stephen, your father would probably say something like, "Now, that's what I'm talking about. That's a story. That's a story," right? Something like that. Fabulous. You do some writing. Well, what are some things that you write?
I write several different genres. I mainly work in fantasy, mm-hmm. okay. but I like to take personal, very personal narratives and put them in this fantasy setting.
Yeah, well, this is all fantasy, so you're in the right place. Shannon, you do some writing. You do some poetry.
I
what are some
do.
Other things that you do?
Well, my favorite things are poetry and creative writing, but yeah. I have a background in a professional writing of all kinds.
Yeah. You're
but
a
my
great, you're a great writer. Yeah,
is poetry.
And now Shannon's linguistic artistry can also be seen on our What's Your Story Facebook page, right?
Yes,
and
sir.
What are we going to see there?
Well, you'll find some fabulous things about all the events we have every month, and as well as information about our fabulous tellers every week, and about the prose and art and all things story.
Yeah, you do a great job at doing some terrific research. You really do, and you point to a lot of trends and updates in storytelling. You know, everything from how Leonard Nimoy, may he rest in peace, was a great storyteller, to some great festivals in town. Now, next week, my guest is going to be a member of a Houston Storytellers Guild, LaVon Carlson, a very skilled and animated teller. The Guild is not only our proud sponsor who contains people like that, but you know, the Guild is also really the best storyteller group in the state. Shannon, why don't you tell the world where and when we meet, please?
We hold monthly story swaps on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. And check out our brand new site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happening.
And fun it is. Thank you, Shannon.
You're
very
welcome.
Listening to So What's Your Story with guest storytellers David Kasten and Stephen Winkler, only on commercial-free 90.1 FM Houston. What David really did best was to demonstrate a Friendswood accent. That was so wonderful, you know? Now, David, you know, I know that you enjoy a lot of different stories, but I also know that you respect people who can tell stories like Steve did, you know, the recovery stories. And how did you feel about that story that he told?
You know, it was so powerful and so raw. Like, I mean, I've never even dealt with anything like that. And so, like, I mean, it's just, I wish I could connect more, but it's just... Yeah. I don't know. It's just hard to describe.
Yeah,
it's just
really beautiful. Yeah, you guys rocked tonight. You really did. These are just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stories. You know, storytelling appears to be the antithesis of what a fledgling math teacher would find interesting, but you do acquire a storytelling experience, and you did love storytelling for a very young age, right?
No, definitely.
Give me a couple of reasons. Give me, like, two adjectives why you really love storytelling. What are the two descriptors that come to mind? Storytelling does what to you? Fill in those blanks.
Captures the audience. It keeps them. It keeps their attention. It can really help make sure information stays in and connect to one another a little closer.
Yeah, you guys did so great, and we're almost done tonight. What'd you think? Not that difficult, right?
No.
Not that difficult at all. You know, stories are creative. Are the creative conversion of life itself into a more powerful and clearer, more meaningful experience. Author Robert McKee, who's also a great lecturer, he's really an acclaimed Aristotle of our time, says that. And I wrote that down because I really think that that captures what the two of you did tonight so well. You have any shout-outs? Any? I know the two of you don't have any friends, but do you have any friends? Anybody you want to shout-out? Are your parents listening?
Oh,
who's
definitely.
Listening? Your mom's
my
listening?
My whole family is listening.
You're listening? Really?
I want them to know I love
listening? Yeah?
I'm going to do a shout-out to my girlfriend Liz. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday. And my friend Kirby.
Oh my God. You got friends. I love it. Thank you, Stephen Winkler and David Kasten, for your authenticity and for helping us to think, to laugh, to cry, to be reminded that feeling for and with each other is what really makes us human. And speaking of human, despite what you might say, Scooter is, so don't move, because he's up next with the Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'll keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Dr. Hank reminding all of you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Enter KP. PFT's Jazz Festival Weekend Getaway Raffle, where the prize is a pair of weekend passes to the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and a three-day condo stay on the weekend of May 1st to the 3rd. Proceeds of this raffle benefits KPFT. At the festival, you'll be able to see Lenny Kravitz, Elton John, Aaron Neville, and a host of other musical acts. Tickets are